Public Radio KMXT is supported by a grant from North Pacific Fuel, serving and continuing the tradition of excellent service to the community at three locations: Marine Dock at 715 Shelikoff Street, Gas and Go at the Y, and Gas and Go at Mill Bay.
It is nearly 12 o'clock, and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 51 degrees under partly cloudy skies. Out at the airport, they have southerly winds at 12 miles per hour. They're down to 56% humidity, and they have 10 miles of visibility. Coming up on the Midday Report, deep sea gas seeps were discovered near the Aleutian Islands. There's a new Archbishop of the Orthodox Church of Alaska. And more on the traditional voyaging canoe and its long journey. That plus a magnitude 5 earthquake in western Alaska was widely felt in the region. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Miami's getting ready for former President Donald Trump and potentially thousands of his supporters. He's been rallying to protest outside the federal courthouse, where he's scheduled to make his initial court appearance tomorrow. Police Chief Manny Morales says his department's bringing in enough resources to handle anywhere from 5,000 to 50,000 people.
We're bringing enough resources to handle crowd anywhere from 5,000 to 50,000. We don't expect any issues.
But Morales says his department's taking the expected protests extremely seriously. Trump arrived in Miami today. Tomorrow afternoon, he's due to face 37 felony counts, most of which are related to the illegal possession of classified documents after the Republican lost to then-presidential candidate Joe Biden in 2020 and left the White House. Trump is fighting to get back there, despite criminal indictments and investigations. The Republican remains the front-runner in a growing field of candidates for the 2024 GOP nomination. Authorities investigating the partial collapse of I-95 in Philadelphia over the weekend confirmed they have found human remains. Here's NPR's Joe Hernandez.
The Pennsylvania State Police say a body was discovered in the wreckage and turned over to the Philadelphia Medical Examiner's Office for identification. It came one day after a tanker truck caught fire beneath an overpass in northeast Philadelphia, later causing the roadway above to collapse. Traffic is stopped in both directions, and officials say it could take months to repair the highway. That could mean significant delays for drivers using the major artery that runs along the East Coast from Florida to Maine. Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro has issued a disaster declaration saying this will allow the Commonwealth to access federal money and rebuild I-95 faster. Joe Hernandez, NPR News, Philadelphia.
In western New York, authorities say a boat flipped over during a tour of an underground cavern system with Lockport Cave Tours this morning. 29 people were on board when the vessel capsized. At least one person was killed. 11 people were injured. Secretary of State Antony Blinken says China has been trying to expand its military power around the world, including in Cuba, and he blames the Trump administration for not doing enough to prevent that. Here's NPR's Michelle Kellerman.
A recent Wall Street Journal report said China has a new spying effort underway in Cuba. Secretary Blinken says the Chinese intelligence gathering on the island is part of a global effort by the People's Republic of China to expand its military presence and intelligence gathering around the world.
Based on the information we have, the PRC conducted an upgrade of its intelligence collection facilities in Cuba in 2019.
Blinken says from the start, the Biden administration has been working, in his words, quietly and carefully to slow down this effort by China, and he thinks that approach is working.
That's Michelle Kellerman reporting. You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News es presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Deep sea gas seeps near the Aleutian Islands were discovered last month. It was during a U.S. federal expedition. KUCB's Sophia Stewart-Rossi takes us on board the research vessel to learn more about what the discovery means.
And so we're going to go up two flights of stairs. I'll take you to the bridge.
Okay. The Okeanos Explorer is docked in Unalaska, and it just finished its first of six expeditions mapping out the deep sea floor around the Aleutian Islands. It's May, and the weather is starting to calm down from the winter season, making it safer for research boats to come out to the Bering Sea. I'm with Expedition Coordinator Sam Cuellar on board. He's with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and works on the 224-foot research vessel.
So this is our control room. This is where we run all the mapping from, is this back row here.
On this ship, Cuellar and his crew discovered three seeps bubbling gas through the seafloor in the Aleutian Trench. And according to NOAA, the discovery is crucial. It's because these gas seeps can create unique surrounding habitats and could provide potential sources of alternative energy and biopharmaceuticals. But to Cuellar and his crew, it was just another day on the job.
If you're in that kind of routine, it's not exciting because it's not important. It's part of your job, and it's really cool to note, but you just keep going on with your job and keep looking for more.
Cuellar says finding these gas seeps wasn't a total surprise. That's because there's research from the U.S. Geological Survey that predicts where gas seeps could be in Alaska's waters. And now with more advanced machinery, there can be more advanced data collection from the seafloor.
Now that you're seeing the different technologies catch up with being able to more properly and economically extract resources from the deep seafloor, we need to better understand them for protection, but also to understand what kind of resources are here.
Alaska's oceans are predominantly unexplored. Cuellar says it's partially due to Alaska's remoteness from the rest of the United States and the environmental difficulties that come with being so far north. But he said ice sheet melt from global warming is making seas more accessible than ever before.
And so there's a renewed push by the U.S. government to better understand what is in those types of waters now that they're accessible.
The Okeanos Explorer is out at sea till mid-October, mapping the deep waters around the Aleutian Islands, in the Aleutian Trench, and in the Gulf of Alaska. You can track the ship online at NOAA's website, and the collected data will be accessible to the public during and after expeditions. In Unalaska, I'm Sophia Stewart-Rossi.
The traditional voyaging canoe Hokulea is setting off on its global journey with big goals. The years-long journey kicks off right here in Alaska. Right now, the canoe is traveling through the southeast region. The Polynesian Voyaging Society is organizing the voyage. They say the goal is to share voyaging heritage while bringing together planetary navigators, spreading a message of caring for the ocean, and connecting with other indigenous communities to spread and share traditional knowledge. Lehua Kamalu is the voyaging director and a navigator. She talked with KRBD's Reagan Miller while the canoe was docked in Haines.
Haines is a really special port to us. We honor the elder Judson Brown, who really was the person who connected our community to a lot of folks here in Southeast and to Alaska, and was really where we started a conversation and we're ultimately gifted to Sitka spruce trees to build one of our Hawaiian voyaging canoes.
That's really special. And kind of in that vein, could you tell me a little bit about why Alaska is this first leg of the journey?
Alaska is such a unique and special place. Right before, in the time scale of voyaging, we did a voyage around the world, actually, from 2014. to 2017, and one of the things about going around the world is it's really hard to go everywhere in a few years' time. And one place that's very special to our community is Alaska, and just due to the way that the voyage worked out, it was going to be really hard for us to actually get all the way to Alaska. And so I think we came home from that voyage really yearning for that reconnection.
And I know you mentioned being able to honor some folks in some of those other communities that you visited. Will you be able, or the crew, will they be able to also get out in these communities as they visit at all, or are you strictly on board?
In our visits with Yakutat, Huna, and Haines already, the community has been incredibly gracious and wonderful hosting all of our crew. Most of them, this is their first time in Alaska. Some of them, their first time leaving Hawaii, really. And as we prepared for this journey, you know, they would always just say, we're going to take care of you when you're in our waters. You're under our protection. You're under our care. They've been able to experience so much of what each place is about, what's important to them, what's valuable in their spaces. They've taught us about salmon and hooligan and about some of the foods, what they do at this time of year, and brought them to many special places. And so we're incredibly grateful for that opportunity. And also, we certainly want to share a little bit more about what we do with our voyaging canoe. Our canoe's name is Pukulea, and this is her first journey to Alaska. She's a very, very special vessel. And so we also want to make sure that our community members and our hosts are able to come down to the dock to visit with us, to meet the crew, to hear about our work and our journey, and just be able to experience a little bit of Hawaii.
And there's so many special things that I feel like can kind of be used to unite the two cultures. The specialness and the uniqueness of the canoes and the voyages is one thing that comes to mind.
Absolutely. So what's wonderful about this relationship is, you know, it's been able to, I think, carry on over the many decades that we've been working with our canoes and our canoe communities, even here in Alaska. When you think about canoe cultures, Alaska and the Yak are very prominent in our minds, and we actually also had an opportunity to celebrate our canoe cultures in a couple of conferences over the past couple of years. It was a little while since the last one, but I think anyone who can appreciate and understand the power of a canoe and connecting place and reminding us of practice and bringing to the other community has been very wonderful as well. And we've also been blessed to be joined by some of the canoe paddlers here from each of the villages and be greeted in with them to the shores. And so there's a very direct connection, and in so many ways this community makes us feel right at home.
And I know it's going to be a pretty long journey, a couple of years, right?
It is. It's going to be a few years. We travel pretty slowly on our vessel. Our average speed is about 5 knots while sailing. Here in Alaska, we're definitely being very cautious. It's a much different landscape or oceanscape than we're used to. Being out on the open water in warm tropical ocean waters. And so here we are definitely yielding to the expertise and the experience of our local ocean guides and fishermen and boat captains to really know this place best.
And what are some of the other stops that you'll make along the way?
There's a few parameters that we keep in mind. We always want to make sure we are first invited in, that we have permission from our First People hosts, from the community members who will be welcoming us. We never want to take anyone by surprise. And so a lot of work goes into just identifying each place and port before we even arrive. And same is true for here in Alaska. This process began, in fact, years ago, and now it's coming to that culmination. So as we go throughout our journey, we always make sure that we are still sort of on course and our relationships are very strong. But after departing Alaska, we will continue on to British Columbia, the West Coast. This is actually another journey where we are hoping maybe to touch the coast of South America. This is something that, after voyaging since 1976, is still eluded us. So if it is meant to be, we will try and make it happen. Carrying forward our journey back to Polynesia through the islands of Rapa Nui, through French Polynesia and Tahiti, onward to Aotearoa, through Cook Islands and Samoa. We are also hoping to visit the islands of one of our amazing teachers in Micronesia. And then we really get to think about how we approach really the Asian continent and the many islands that fill that area and the many cultures. So that one will still develop as we go along, and we'll keep updating that with our communities as we go.
That sounds like such an adventure.
It definitely is.
Lehua Kamalu is the voyaging director and a navigator for the Polynesian Voyaging Society. She was speaking with KRBD's Reagan Miller. It's been nearly 3 years since the Archbishop of the Orthodox Church of Alaska passed away. The church elected a new bishop last year, a major event for the Alaska Diocese, which is arguably the largest diocese in the entire Orthodox Church. Theo Greenlee reports that in May, Alaska's new leader, Bishop Alexei, made his first visit to the Aleutian and Pribilof Islands, some of the furthest flung parishes in the diocese.
There are around 50 people who live in Atka, and about half of them are at the airstrip to meet the plane that just landed. But on this gray, windy morning in late May, they're here for more than the usual shipment of mail and occasionally donuts from Dutch Harbor. A tall man with long gray beard, flowing black robes, emerges from the plane, and the people greet him with a hymn. Bishop Alexei took over as the head of the Alaska Diocese last year, after the previous Bishop David Mahaffey passed away in 2020. He says he's been trying to visit the 80 or so parishes in his vast region.
I'm in the Aleutians, making a pastoral visit to reach out to the people, to let the people know that the church, which has been with them, supporting them, supporting their culture from the very beginning, that it is still here. COVID has kept me out, and now that COVID is beginning to recede, I'm there to be with the people.
The Orthodox Church holds a complicated position in Unanga culture and history. While many Russian settlers committed atrocities in the Aleutian Islands, the Orthodox Church was widely embraced, in part because it integrated Unanga traditions and culture into the church.
The Russian Church always took what they saw in the community, saw in the people, and they said, "This is beautiful. This is worth preserving."
The bishop's also here to perform the hierarchical divine liturgy, which is only served in his grace's presence. But there's been a bit of a hiccup.
We heard, you know, the flights the day before had canceled.
Crystal Dushkin grew up in Atka, and she helped organize the bishop's visit. She says the bishop's flight was almost canceled. It was touch and go, but the bishop and the clergy did make it in. But the bishop's bags, they got bumped.
Oh yeah, the vestments didn't make it in.
The bishop wears special liturgical robes, and he can't perform certain services without them, including the hierarchical divine liturgy. I asked Dushkin about it. She isn't fazed.
I got to tell you, I was nervous.
I was kind of oddly calm. It actually worked out beautifully because the bishop, with not having his vestments, he wasn't able to serve. And so he sang with us in the choir.
St. Nicholas Church is one of the oldest parishes in the state, and it hasn't had a resident priest since 1899. Still, the congregation has maintained the songs and liturgies for over a century. They're performed in several languages, including English, Church Slavonic, and Unangam Tenu.
There is a great love for the tradition, a great love for the languages that they've maintained. They have maintained miraculously.
So they held evening services, and the bishop sang in the choir. But the next morning, the clouds parted, the heavens shone down, and a Beechcraft King Air twin turboprop plane landed in Atka, this time with the vestments, and just in time for church.
Well, by the grace of God, by the prayers of St. Nicholas, by the prayers of St. Jacob, we were able to celebrate the divine hierarchical divine liturgy. Getting the vestments here was, of course, no easy task. But it was no easy task to get the relics of St. Nikolai from...
Most of the folks in Atka are congregants, and the church still holds a special place in the community. Church attendance in Alaska has declined in recent years, following similar trends of varying faiths across the nation. Still, more than 200 years after the Russian Orthodox Church was established in Alaska, the church cites roughly 50,000 to 60,000 adherents statewide. In Atka, I'm Theo Greenlee.
There was a magnitude 5 earthquake centered 20 miles south of Circle yesterday. State seismologist Mike West says the 6:32 a.m. quake was felt fairly widely.
Pretty strongly in central Circle area, and felt Fairbanks, Delta Junction, North Pole.
West says there were no reports of any damage, but the earthquake raises interest because it occurred along the Tintina Fault.
Over near the Canada border, north of Central, south of kind of Fort Yukon.
An area where he says the geology is indicative of earthquakes, but there hasn't been much activity.
Sunday's earthquake was the most significant earthquake there, I think, that we have on record.
West says unlike the much more active Denali Fault to the south, the Tintina's potential is lesser known.
So earthquakes like this go into all of our future understanding and our models of what is possible.
He notes that Sunday's event does not lessen the chance of a larger Tintina Fault quake.
Earthquakes of this size in no way sort of mitigate the, the potential of larger earthquakes. It is a myth that lots of little small earthquakes make large earthquakes less possible.
West stresses the importance of understanding the regional seismic threat posed by the Tintina Fault to public safety, including informing building codes and infrastructure design.
Support for KMXT comes from GCI. GCI is a participant in the Affordable Connectivity Program, providing qualifying Alaska households entry-level broadband internet. More information at gci.com/ACP.
Stocks open higher. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer with a Marketplace Minute. The Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ all began the day up less than 0.5% ahead of a busy week. Tomorrow, we get the Consumer Price Index for May, and on Wednesday, the Federal Reserve announces its decision on interest rates. The stock exchange NASDAQ is buying Adenza, which makes software that helps banks manage risk and report data to regulators. NASDAQ says it paid $10.5 billion for Adenza. J.P. Morgan Chase has agreed to settle a lawsuit filed by one of Jeffrey Epstein's victims. The anonymous victim, known as Jane Doe, alleged that Epstein paid her and other underage girls he trafficked through his J.P. Morgan accounts. The bank issued a statement saying the settlement is in the best interests of all parties. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer with the Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by Raymond James, Wealth Management Banking and Capital Markets. Disclosures at RaymondJames.com.
KMXT is supported in part by First National Bank Alaska, celebrating its 60th anniversary serving Kodiak by giving away weekly prizes through July 14th. A grand prize of 60,000 Alaska Airlines miles will be awarded on Friday, July 14, at the Customer Appreciation Anniversary event at the Kodiak branch from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. The event is open to all. More information is available at fnbalaska.com/Kodiak60. Member FDIC.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon, and welcome to your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the 12th day of June, the year 2023. The sun rose at 5:09. It will set again at 11:10. That will give us 18 hours and 1 minute of daylight, a gain of 1 minute and 21 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low for this date was 33, set in 1965, and our record high was 77, set in 1995. Currently, 51 degrees, partly cloudy skies. It's been a nice day. Out at the airport, they are showing southerly winds at 12 miles per hour and 10 miles of visibility. They continue to call for a 20% chance of rain today and mostly cloudy skies with a high near 54, south winds 15 to 20. Mostly cloudy overnight, too, with southwest winds to 10 and a low of 44, and mostly sunny tomorrow with a high near 54 and west winds to 5, becoming completely calm in the morning. We have an outgoing tide. The tide turned around 10 o'clock this morning. Our next low tide will be at 3:55 this afternoon here on the east side and be 1 foot. followed by a high tide at 10:37 this evening of 8.2 feet. Over on the west side, your next low tide will happen at 4:43 this afternoon and be 2.3 feet, followed by a high tide at 11:04 p.m. of 13.4 feet. Mariners, here is your forecast for Marble Island to Sitkanak to 15 nautical miles offshore. Small craft advisory through tonight with southwest winds to 20 knots today and tonight. 9-foot seas coming down to 8 foot tonight and down to 6 feet tomorrow. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory for tonight and tomorrow. Southwest 25 tonight and 8-foot seas in the Shelikof. Southwest 25 tomorrow and 8-foot seas. And southwest 20 with 6-foot seas tomorrow night. Here's the brand new ADF&G announcement.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 2, date issued 10 a.m. on June 12th. There will be a 57-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Tuesday, June 13th until 9 p.m. Thursday, June 15th in the following areas in the Central and North Cape sections of the Northwest Kodiak District. There will be a 33-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Wednesday, June 14th until 9 p.m. Thursday, June 15th in the following areas in the Southwest Afognak section of the Afognak District, the Anton Larson Bay, Sheratine Bay, Kajuyak Bay, Terror Bay, Inter-Uganic Bay, Spiridon Bay, Zacher Bay, and Uyak Bay sections of the Northwest Kodiak District, the Cape Alatak, Humpy Deadman, Alatak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alatak District, the Northwest Afognak, Paul's Bay, and Paranosa Bay sections of the Afognak District, the Eastside Kodiak District, and the Big River and Outer Kukak Bay sections of the Mainland District. Closed waters will be reduced from noon Wednesday, June 14th until 9 p.m. Thursday, June 15th, in the following areas: at Kathlea Creek, stream number 262301 to the stream terminus, and at Sultry Creek, stream number 259415 to the stream terminus. As previously announced, the following areas remain open until further notice: the Inner Katoy Bay, Outer Katoy Bay, Duck Bay, and Iziut Bay sections of the Afognak District, the Fowl Bay Special Harvest Area, and the Waterfall Bay Special Harvest Area. Fishermen are reminded that in the Kodiak area, including the Mainland District, beginning at noon Friday, June 9th, until further notice, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse and gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Closed waters are reduced until further notice in the following locations: in Fowl Bay, to the stream terminus at Hidden Lake Creek, stream number 251406, in Waterfall Bay, to the stream terminus at Little Waterfall Creek, stream number 251822, into the stream terminus of Big Waterfall Creek, stream number 251821, and in Katoy Bay to the fishing game markers located at Little Katoy and Big Katoy Bays near stream numbers 252323 and 252324. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart and detailed in Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations and Statistical Charts. Harvest strategies and Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office, and of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour record-a-phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing, and this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
A rather consequential meeting is happening today. That's happening over at the Koniag building, and it's a call from AFN for a digital equity listening session that will be held today at 3:15 p.m. in the Koniag building. Go upstairs to the conference room. In order to receive federal digital equity funds, the state of Alaska must conduct community listening sessions. AFN respectfully requests your participation in this listening session so that your input can help shape funding for broadband and digital equity opportunities for tribes and communities in the near future. Those in attendance will be eligible for door prizes. And again, that's 3:15 p.m. today over at the Koniag building on Near Island. Go to the upstairs conference room. That's immediately following the FEMA meeting. Special activities coming up at the Kodiak Refuge Visitor Center include tomorrow's invasive species activities and information. That's starting at noon, goes till 5 p.m., courtesy of the Kodiak Soil and Water Conservation District. On Wednesday, from noon to 1 p.m., there will be an invasive species presentation. And from 1 to 2 p.m., games and crafts. Bring the kids, 1 to 2 p.m., games and crafts, Wednesday, at the Kodiak Refuge Visitor Center. The Kodiak City Council will be holding a special meeting on Wednesday that will be happening in the Kodiak Public Library's multipurpose room, and it will begin at 1 p.m. The meeting is open to the public, and public members are also encouraged to web stream the meeting. That link, as well as meeting packets, are available online at the City of Kodiak website. Contact the City Clerk's office with any questions at 907-486-8636.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.